This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright and Brock Rahm.
All right. Got my diploma back here.
Yeah, it looks good.
Mine's in a box somewhere.
Autumn Johnson is a digital reporter for the NCAA working with women's sports, and she's also a reporter for the NBA 2K League. She landed a job during the pandemic, so we get into her process there, how she leverages social media to get her name out there, and how her former playing days influence her work approach today.
I am at time.is, and we just pick a second to clap on so we can line up our audio and post.
Okay. I've never heard of this. Okay, awesome.
All right, let's clap on 32.
Okay.
Love it.
Love it.
All right.
That was awesome.
See where that gets us.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Today, we're joined by Autumn Johnson, who is an NCAA digital reporter and NBA 2K League reporter, and she was also the 2020 Esports Top Analyst of the Year. She loves research. She's done news reporting, producing, shooting, interviewing, script writing, editing. She's got a little bit of everything under her belt, and your name has come up quite often lately. My coworker, Robin Neal, highlighted you in her series that she posted. And Tamara Brown, who hosted our International Women's Day episode, talked about you and raves about you as well and says that you guys connect all the time, too. So excited to have you here and finally get to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I figured as the icebreaker, we'd start out by talking about brackets. You know, I saw a video that you shared and first. You know, there's a couple of things that we can get into. I really liked the way you set up the video with the tees and got into it. You were telling people how they should pick their bracket to have an above average bracket. But I also wanted to ask you a little bit about your role with the NCAA as the digital reporter. Can you get into a little bit of what you do there?
Yeah. So mainly it's just, you know, highlighting women's athletes, like just making sure that they get the same coverage that these men do, you know, because March Madness is the biggest time of the year. That's when all eyes are on college basketball. So it's just been fun throughout the entire season, not just in March, but, you know, start to finish, highlighting their talents, telling their stories. So that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm interviewing coaches and players, you know, out off the court and on the court stories, but just, you know, providing weekly analysis like my Power 10 or my bracket predictions. We did like four throughout the season of how the bracket would look like. And then now we're here. It's crazy to think that we're already here in March. But, you know, just doing different things like that, highlighting packages, you know, just different analysis and writing articles and editing. Like I'm a one-man band handling everything. So that's been really fun and different because I've never done predictions or, you know, my Power 10. And it's funny, like every single time I put something on our platforms, it's like my opinion is going out there. And it's like, not everyone's going to agree with your opinion, but it's like, hey, you know, this is what's starting conversation. So I think that has been really fun to be a part of. But overall, just highlighting women in general in sports is huge because I played ball and I know how it is to not get that same love. So I'm very, very happy to step into this role. This is the first time that we have a women's basketball reporter for .com. So it's been fun.
Doing those power rankings, you don't ever get calls from coaches or teams being like, hey, why'd you put me at 8? We should be like 4.
Thankfully, I haven't. I've been safe all season. No coaches, no players, but fans, most definitely. Yeah. They do not play about their teams.
Yeah, one thing I think is... I got to work a lot with women's basketball at Notre Dame. And that's what really made me kind of fall in love with the women's side of the game is are the fans, because women's basketball fans are extremely dedicated, right? Like Notre Dame's fans will come and they'll sit in the parking lot and wait for doors to open, right? To like rush in. Now, obviously, that's like a program by program basis. And Notre Dame has a very, very historic program. But what's that been like seeing the fan interaction on the women's side, on your articles, now that there is a true .com reporter? What's that engagement been like?
Yeah, it's honestly just amazing to see, because like you said, like once you experience a women's basketball game, like you see the love and you see what the fans pour into it. Like they know about the players, they know about their stories. It's not just, it's an investment for everyone. So that's been very special to be a part of, because, you know, like they follow these teams and it's just nice to have that voice to it, to tell more beyond like the stats or just watching games. They're able to hear from their favorite athletes, and that's all they want, is to just get a better connection, and someone needs to do it and provide that type of conversation. So to be that face and that person has been an honor, and I'm glad to take it on, because I've always wanted to do something like this, especially working at Turner. But just, you know, looking at the comments, which is something I try not to do, they're actually good, like some great feedback and, you know, a lot of things that people may have not known, I can bring it to their attention. It's been great. I love it. And they've been all great the entire season. I'm just excited to see what else March will bring, but I'm happy to bring that to fans.
So in the piece that I referenced a little bit earlier, you mentioned, I can say this, we're recording this before the tournament starts, but I can say this because it's going to come out after the games have started playing. But you basically encourage people to go chalk almost across the board until they get closer to the end. So it's interesting to me, because what I think, you know, we're going to get into a little bit about your job and some of the risks that you've taken. You're basically encouraging people, and in creativity, it takes a lot of risk to put yourself out there, to, you know, taking risks to advance your career and different kinds of things. And you're basically encouraging people not to take risks when it comes to their bracket. So I wanted to ask you about that.
For sure. I actually just filled out a bracket, and doing all of this like research on it and like doing those videos, it's kind of funny that I didn't even take my own advice, because I definitely picked some sleepers and some upsets. But I did a separate video also that I'm going to put out shortly about like how to pick your best sleeper. And that's also found in like the 7 and 10 seeds, or like teams that are just coming on the up and up that you don't know about. And this season in general has been so, I mean, we haven't seen anything like it, because this is the first time everyone's going through this pandemic. So just finding a way to also realize that, hey, like some teams have a different strength of schedule because, you know, they didn't get to play this team during an out of conference matchup because it got canceled due to COVID. Like Baylor and UConn, they were supposed to play each other, but that got canceled due to COVID-19 protocols. But now they're in the same region, so we might get that matchup. So that would be very interesting to see that, you know, one team is going to be in the Final Four. In the finals, and it may not be like UConn and Baylor. They got to fight their way to get there. So I'm super excited to see that. But we also have to remember that, you know, also, yes, it's not okay to go chalk, like it's safe to go chalk, but make sure you do pick some upsets, because I mean, just considering this season, it's been different. So
yeah, that's my one upset, to not have all ones in the Final Four. So I did follow some of your advice. So you talked a little bit about playing sports growing up. Can we get into your background a little bit? You graduated school in 2018, got into reporting and doing some of that. So I guess, can we go back and what helped you get into this? What playing sports growing up helped you get into it and wanted? Geez, that was a terrible question.
Don't edit it. Just keep going.
Going back when you got into sports and getting into reporting, is your playing days what really helped make you want to get into this field?
Yes. So I have an older brother, and I used to follow him around everywhere. So that's how I got into basketball, just playing with him and his friends. And I took that, did rec ball, went through middle school, high school, AAU, And I just wanted to stay in the game. Like, I didn't want to play in college and I was just burnt out. But when I got to college, I'm like, okay, who is Autumn outside of basketball? Like, I was lost. I didn't know my like true identity in the world. Like, what am I passionate about? What do I like to do? That's all I did, like sit in gyms all summer and like play games. And I didn't know what else, you know, I love. So I tried different things while I was in college. And I was actually an exercise and science major, and I ended up changing that. And I was just lost in general. So I decided to go to the basketball team at Kennesaw State, see if I could be affiliated in some type of way. They didn't have tryouts or anything. So I asked, could I be their manager? They said yes. That gave me opportunities to be a part of a team, a family, and also practice with them. So it felt like I was on a team in a sense and still in basketball, but not really. So there was still some emptiness there. And I was telling, I went to this broadcast boot camp in Atlanta, and I heard the sports reporter just talking about how she loved to talk about sports and that's what she does every day. That's her job. And I'm like, I can do that too. Like, that sounds awesome. That's what you do for a living. So I tried that out, just like, you know, going to my team at Kennesaw State and telling them like, hey, I just found this new passion and I really want to go for it. Like, can I do this for our team? And they're like, oh yeah, we're actually, you know, we actually have an ESPN Plus program that you should join. Like, I can talk to them for you. And I was like, okay, awesome. And I went there and they were like, yeah, like, what can you do? Have you done this before? And I'm like, no, I haven't. So they said if I could show them anything, they would consider me. And I went to the basketball team to ask if I could interview a couple of them. I rented out some cameras, did a little interview and sent it to them. And they were like, okay. So that's how I got all into it. I just wanted to have a sense of like still being in the game, like performing, messing up, getting better, just finding a way to stay in it and not really be in it. But this has been perfect. I think, you know, basketball, my love and passion for that was just a perfect setup going into this.
I think you had a good anecdote there, basically, that I think we hear from a lot of people who are successful in this industry. And that's that you really created your own opportunity, right? You didn't wait for the opportunity to come to you. And I think that's a really good lesson for people looking to get into it, right? Especially on the reporting side, a lot of those opportunities just aren't going to come to you. You really have to go out and make them for yourself. And that's a fantastic example of that.
Thank you.
So you started at Kennesaw State working with the basketball team, creating your own opportunities. And I saw on your reels, you know, working for a local news station, trying to fill out your reporting capabilities. How did you build your skill set? Well, once you found this passion?
Yeah, I mean, just trying to find opportunity anywhere. Like you said, like nothing is given to you. You have to like go find it, because especially being in college, because it's so hard, like they want you to have experience, but it's like, okay, how do I get experience? Where do I get experience while I'm still in school? So I joined Replay TV, and this has all been through networking. Like everything that I've gotten has just been like talking to people, telling them my passion and going from there and people believing in me. So I started when I was a sideline reporter for ESPN Plus. I went into Replay TV, and that gave me a professional outreach, like with the Atlanta Hawks, with the Atlanta United, Atlanta Dream, just talking to professional athletes. That just put me on a different stage altogether. I wrote for Swish Appeal because a lot of people told me coming up, like, hey, it's not just being on camera. Like, you got to write a lot to be in this space. And that is not taken lightly. So I joined Swish Appeal to write for women's basketball hoops like NCAA and WNBA, which was a skill that has taken me far and I didn't even know that it would. But, you know, getting those opportunities set me up. I thought it would set me up to be good to go right after college. But as soon as I graduated, I was jobless for like 8 months. And I was like, what did I just do? I put in all this work for nothing. Like, I don't know what to do. I was lost. But then there's a station down the street from my house in Augusta called WJBF. It wasn't in sports, but it gave me an opportunity to tell stories and perfect my writing, be a one-man band, just hone in on different skills in that way. So even though WJBF was news and not sports, it was still a hidden blessing because going into NCAA.com, that's exactly what they were looking for, a person that could be a one-man band and do it all. And that's something I was able to do for that station, is to turn a package on a deadline and be good to go. But I was part-time at WJBF, so it allowed me also to get exposure for the 2K League because I was still trying to go full-time. I was a weekend reporter working Friday through Sunday, barely getting paid and still at home. So I was like, okay, I need something else. So I was still putting my reel out there, and someone from the 2K League saw it, and I was able to be a fill-in for their program. And that's how we're here, just continuously networking, putting out my work, and just trying to go from there still.
Right. And I think I think a lot of young reporters can get laser focused on not wanting to do the one man band type stuff, right? Not wanting to shoot and edit and turn around their own package. But how valuable has that? Obviously, it's been extremely valuable for you, right? It's the advice I always gave to students at Notre Dame who are trying to get onto the play by play or the reporter side, is hone your editing skills. When did you start really, you know, editing and realizing like, oh, I can do this and I can turn this around on my own, and I don't need a team of people to get this done?
Yeah. Well, starting at, my only internship in college was my senior year at Turner Sports. So that's when I started editing. Like, I really didn't know how to do it until I had that internship. And I was one of those students that was like, okay, you see all this happening in the digital space where, you know, people don't have to go through the news station route. You have different innovative opportunities to go a different route. So that's something I geared more to. But like I said, WJBF was a hidden blessing because I was able to go out and operate a camera that's huge and I've never done before by myself, and get a story, talk to people, and craft it in about a minute and a half. I've never done that before. Coming back and writing a script that is informative and also telling the community like what's going on. It's not just something, you know, you can take lightly. Like, you're informing your community at the end of the day. So you have to make sure it's perfect and good to go. And just, you know, editing precisely, capturing a story, telling your story with the footage that you got while you were out in the field. And then putting that all into a package to perform on air. I think I couldn't have gotten that anywhere else better than working at a news station and then seeing that translate at .com. I'm doing the same exact thing, except for we already have the highlights that SIDs provide and schools provide. So I'm able to take that, but that's crucial to them, that they don't have to put in extra people within my position to help me produce this piece. I can just do it all together, put it online, put it on social media, put it on our site, and be good to go. So I'm very thankful for that.
I kind of want to flip gears to the 2K side of things. You do all this NCAA.com reporting. What's it like to then switch gears, and it's still sports, but it's esports, and move from on the court physical sports to in the virtual space in 2K League and reporting on that?
Yeah, I was super nervous about that, like transitioning into traditional hoops from to virtual hoops. Like, I didn't know that people had a job in this. And season one, I didn't even know the 2K League was a thing. So when they saw my work and asked, like, could we have a conversation about being a sideline reporter, I was super nervous because I'm a perfectionist, and I really have to change that about myself. But I don't like to mess up. I don't like, you know, not knowing. And that was a foreign space that I was about to walk into. But I had to have confidence going in and just prep for it like I would any other opportunity. I'm big on prep and research. So I did that, watched plenty of games from season one, saw some storylines going into season one. But then still going into my first gig, I'm like, okay, I still don't want to mess this up because we're still, you know, now I have to go perform what I just prepped for. But I went in with confidence in the mindset, knowing that it's basketball. Like, at the end of the day, it's hoops. I've played the game. I know the game. I played 2K. I know it. So just go in and talk about basketball. And going in, I did well for my first time, and I just took that mindset and did that, like, asked questions that I would ask a normal athlete. And that's what they ran with as well. So it worked out perfectly. But now I'm trying to take it up a notch every season. Like, I had an opportunity to learn the best duos and the player personnel and their storylines. So now I'm getting big into that prep and, you know, elevating what I know already and challenging myself to know different aspects of that. So taking it up a notch this season for sure. And last season I did that because now I'm comfortable with the players, the league, what's going on. So I still do take that mindset of it's basketball, but now I'm trying to take it up a notch as well.
And it all comes back to the stories. It sounds like your research and what you're looking into comes back to, these are people who are playing a game, right? What I guess, what differences are there between the athletes playing on the court or on the field versus the ones playing virtually in esports?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the difference really is the physicality of it. They're just sitting down, spaced out apart, and competing in that way. But overall, the similarities, I would say, is like, there's still crazy energy and they're still like, you know, it's so indescribable. You have to be there, like, in the arena. There's trash talk. There's players going at it with other players. They're like fist bumping, high fiving their teammates. They have huddles and talking to their coach. It's just, it gives you that energy that a regular game would. And they're all competing. They all have the same mindset. They're competing for a championship. They're competing for money. They're competing to be the best team in the league. And that's exciting to be a part of. And I'm asking them questions. Like, if I'm talking to a point guard, I'm talking to how their vision is on the court and how they're able to find X, Y, and Z. Like, it's the same thing. And I think the energy overall is what excites me about it, because just seeing their level of passion and what they take their mindset to be the best, I'm all for that. So there's differences as far as like the physicality of it, but as far as the mindset, the competitive mindset, it's all the same.
When you've mentioned research a couple times, and I know that's something that you seem to take great pride in, trying to do the research up front so that you're prepared and ready to when you go in, because you've said that you're a perfectionist when it comes down to that stuff. What does that process look like for you?
So first, I mean, it can be anywhere, online, social media, but first things first, whenever I'm starting off, I always go online to, like, what did their websites, looking up different articles and reading through those. And then once I get the gist of everything and writing those bullet points down, the important pieces and storylines, then I take it a step further and go onto their social media and their players' personal social media, and finding like different things and different nuggets that they say. And then after that, once I get my things that I want to hit on, I go to the players or the coaches and set that up with the SID to ask them about those questions that I found, to get, you know, their perspective on why they said that, and get a quote from them, so it has more depth to the story. So I think just talk, like, social media is so underrated to get these type of stories, because that's where their personal life lives. That's where they're more vulnerable, and you can see what exactly is going through their head on these type of moments, rather than to get it on an article that's just giving you the story. I think you can go beyond that and see what else they're talking about it, and then go to the source and see how they're feeling about it, to get, you know, some quotes and some credibility to that. So I'm everywhere with it. I'm talking to people, I'm researching on social media, stalking people, all that good stuff.
So you mentioned social media, and that's obviously been something that you've used to your advantage too, in order to get a job. So How have you taken what, maybe through some of your research of seeing how other people have used social media, how did you take and leverage social media to benefit you to gain a job?
Yeah, I didn't notice how big social media could play a part of that until I was just playing around with different techniques of how to get a job. Because when I first graduated from Kennesaw State and I was jobless for a while, I was putting out my work everywhere. I was sending it to just everyone, but I was mainly putting my demo reels on, like, you know, Instagram and Facebook, places that only your family could see. But then one day my friend was like, hey, like, you know, why don't you put it on Twitter to see how that will go? Because at least if you retweet it, it will get on other people's timelines. It's not just people that you know. You can do that. And I'm like, okay, cool, I'll try it. So I tried that on LinkedIn and Twitter. And then the next day when I woke up, my demo reel blew up. And I was like, what's going on? I don't even know what it was at night. And I woke up and next thing you know, it took off. And it was the first demo reel that went viral in that sense. So it started a whole new trend of putting your demo reel on Twitter. And lots of people were just doing it. And it was taken off. But to see that go, like, play a part of, like, put your work out there, that was when I noticed, like, okay, I can't take that part of it lightly. Like, I need to put my work where people can see it. It doesn't need to be just hidden off and on just Instagram where my mom can like it and love it, because of course she would. It needs to be in front of other people. So I definitely still do that to this day. That was a big lesson to keep doing that. Put your work on LinkedIn, put it on Twitter. And that's how I got my first job also with the 2K League. I put my demo reel on LinkedIn and the content producer saw it, loved it, got that conversation, and I'm here. So I'm still to this day always putting my work out there, because you never know who is looking at it. And even if it's not in that moment, they can know about you and still come back to you one day. So I still do it, even if it's not getting attention or love, still just going to put my work out there.
Yeah, that's great. And revisiting your perfectionist mentality, I think there also is a little bit of a mindset of hesitation maybe for people to put their work out there. It's like, oh, well, you know, I don't know if this is really good enough. So how do you balance that and make sure that people can see your work, and when do you decide what you post?
Yeah. I mean, you have to put that, just block that out, because I went through that. Not everyone's going to love your work. When I was sending my work to people or sitting down with people for them to look at what I'm doing, I've had people just tear it up and be like, no, this isn't it. Like, you should probably do something else. Like, this isn't for you starting out. And that could really destroy a fresh reporter. But I mean, you just have to shake that off and understand that not everyone's going to agree with what you say, the opinions you bring, the style you bring. You just have to be confident in yourself, in what you're putting out. And even if it's not the best, keep getting better. And the right time is just, it's whenever. It's your work and it's progress. Just because it might not be, you know, like Carrie Champion level or anyone that's already big in this industry, it may not be there, but at least if you're putting in that work, your day one, everyone has a day one. Carrie Champion had a day one. She wasn't how she is today. She had to build to get there. So the perfect time is now. Like, if your work isn't there, put it out, because that also gives documentation of how much you've grown. And I like also put my stuff on private, because I'm like, okay, that was terrible. Like, I don't know what I was doing in that moment, but it's growth. And I'm able to look at it now and be like, okay, I've came a long way. So just do it. Do it and grow from it. Look back at it and see where you can perfect certain pieces of it and just keep going from there.
I think we got our tease for this episode.
Yeah, it's great.
That was awesome. So I want to go back to what I mentioned earlier, because I think people, whether they're videographers or content producers or editors, they can take something from the tease that you did for this piece that I watched for the tourney brackets, because of the way you set it up. how do you go about approaching that tease to get people to engage with the content so that they stick around and listen to it? Because we all know the, you know, time frames that people spend on content maybe aren't as high. You know, there's a lot of talk about people not having the same attention spans, you know, attention economy and all that kind of stuff. So how do you approach that tease to get people to stay with you?
Yeah. So overall, just giving a gist of what I'll be talking about, but making it fun and bringing my own style to it. That's the biggest thing. Like, what am I about to watch for the next 3 minutes? Well, I'm going to give it to you in this maybe one or two sentences and make it a little fun, make it definitely high energy, because the way you set the tone is, you know, how people get hooked in. So I definitely want to make sure that piece is high energy and go from there. So I try to at least make it short and sweet and let people know what they're getting into before they sit through everything, to know that hey, like, you should stick around. I have more to say. But I think the high energy piece of it is, you know, what gets me hooked into it personally. Like, if I'm looking at a piece, I want to see, like, am I going to be sitting here just like watching it and bored, or am I coming for also facts, but then also the personality and style and swag that you're bringing into it? So I just make sure that I'm always high energy and whenever I'm tipping off anything.
What was your style when you were playing back in your playing days? I feel like there might be a little bit more of like an aggressive Autumn or maybe dribble between the legs, behind the back, and a little bit of a, you know, showing off when you're hooping, or what was that like?
I was mainly a shooter. So I started off as a point guard and I transitioned into being on the wing whenever I was growing up. So a lot of like the how you see today, how women are just being walking highlights, basically, like Paige Becker is like crossing folks up. I wasn't one of those players. I was a scorer, like get to the hoop, score, mainly beyond the arc. But I also, growing up in my rec days and middle school days, I was also a hothead, and I didn't realize that. Like, I'm very aggressive. So when I'm playing basketball, not in real life, I guess there's like a new Autumn whenever I'm on the court. But that type of energy was always brought out to me, but I didn't realize how like that could also not be well on the court. So I had to transition to just growing up as a player in high school, but I took that aggression out on like defense. I was very defensive minded and making sure that, okay, if I'm having a bad scoring game, like my defender is definitely not going to score on me. Like, that was always my mindset. Like, I might get my buckets, but you're definitely not going to get yours. So I was always the person that would guard the best player on the court. And I just didn't like the fact that, you know, someone could score on you, and I didn't want it to be me. So I would always play lockdown defense more than anything. I didn't really care about the points that much. Like, if I can lock down my defender at the opponent at the end of the day, I was good to go. So yeah, taking that aggression and growing as a player, and, you know, I miss it a lot just talking about it, because I haven't had to think about that question in a while, so that's a great question.
Flipping a little bit to your NCAA.com reporter hat here, with the women's tournament coming up, whose play style do you like the most, and are you most looking forward to seeing in the tournament, since we're talking play style here?
Oh, man. So this season is crazy because it's so wide open. Like, last season, you knew maybe it could have been like Oregon and South Carolina matching up. This season, it's so many teams. Like, someone asked me today, who do you think is going to be in the finals, or at least the final four? And I'm like, I don't know, because it can go any way, because there's so many balanced attacks that are in this league. But I would say I love the way that Baylor plays. Like, they're the only team, as far as like post play, that can, like, Nalissa Smith, she's incredible. She can run the floor with the guards, and the way they're able to tip it up to her and she's able to get it in transition, like, that is very valuable, because now you basically have four guards in the court running with you. To see how she's been able to, like, elevate her game in that way, that's been very fun to see. And Dede Richards, I mean, she's had an incredible story this season so far, but her first time being a point guard, and she has like the lowest assist to turnover ratio. That's incredible in itself. And the way she's been able to set up her team to be a point guard for the first time, that's been fun. Texas A&M is fun because, I mean, they have five players like that can lead in scoring every night. And plus they have help off the bench. UConn is fun because Paige Beckers, like I said, she's a walking highlight. Like, she is a walking bucket. She's a clutch player. She's fun. She's going to give you something new every time and kill you with a different move. Her, as a freshman, her game has just been so fun to watch. And there's one more team. There's so many. Louisville, Dana Evans. Like, she, her game is just always breathtaking. Like, the way she can get to the basket is incredible. And last team I would say is Maryland. I mean, they have six players scoring in double digit figures. I don't think any team can say that right now. I'm pretty sure. But that they're the number one team in the nation in scoring offense. They've been incredible. So I'm so excited about these next couple of weeks to see how it all plays out. There's so many great teams this season. So we'll see.
How does your workload shift once the women's tournaments start? Are you doing a lot more coverage? Is it a little bit less because there's less teams and storylines to cover? What's that balance like for you between regular season and postseason?
So this is actually going to be my first time figuring that out because right. I started June. It was maybe June or July. So I did preseason work. That was kind of a little lighter because we were doing like the all-time starting five for Tennessee and history. Different content pieces like that to still give basketball coverage, but not so much of like what's happening in season because we haven't gotten there. So we did like pieces like that and just telling more stories into now shifting into more analysis during the season. So during the season is heavy, but I see as postseason, just looking forward to that, it's probably going to be catching up with players and doing more interviews, hearing more of their off season, like how this season went for them since it was so different. You know, that's going to be my main goal, is catching more up with these players and telling their off the court stories.
Recently starting the NCAA.com gig, what was that like during a pandemic? I see you have the nice people at home listening can't see it, but what you use in your videos is behind you. You have a nice little set built at home. How was that transition like during a pandemic?
It was different because I still haven't met my team in person. Like, the way we're doing this, this is how I've met them. I haven't been in office. That was actually my first, well, this is my first full-time job. So, you know, for this to go down this way, it's kind of different because you don't have to wake up and get dressed and drive to go to work and, you know, go in the day and see your coworkers and work with them. Like, it's all a learning curve because, you know, your training is done online and it's different when someone can be right there helping you. So it was a lot of things I had to self-teach myself. But it was different because, you know, everything's virtual and there's a lot of things that I didn't know that I had to rely on YouTube or Tamer, who we mentioned earlier before this interview, like, you know, just calling friends who've been in this space before and have your support and are willing to help that, you know, you probably won't want to ask your coworkers because, you know, you feel like you should know it, and just going to friends and being able to help in that way. That was very huge for Tamer to step in and just help me with different things coming into this new job, but definitely different because I haven't met anyone before and I'm still excited to do so. And the fact that, you know, maybe one day I will get that office experience, but, you know, one day at a time, we'll get there.
Well, it's awesome to have a gig right now just to start during the pandemic is really cool. And I think some of the advancements in technology have been really cool to see. I don't know that 5 years ago that this would have been as possible for, you know, for you to do and collaborate with people, even though you haven't met them in the office, but at least collaborate and figure out a way to post content online. It's taken quite a few strides for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think with the 2K League, you know, working with them too, just having that balance has helped me being able to work from home. Like, I'm blessed to have two jobs right now and being able to be here and be flexible with those two. Like, if I have a lunch break, I'm doing NBA 2K League content. And I don't think I would be able to do that if I was in office at Turner. So being able to balance in that way and finding ways to like break out or wake up early instead of driving to work, being able to wake up early and use that time to do some 2K League content, that's been, I don't even think that could have went down if, you know, if life was different. So I'm very thankful, even though this is a tough situation, like I think this has definitely played in my benefit to be able to balance the two in that way.
What advice do you have, Autumn, for people who were in your spot? You know, you mentioned it took you 8 months to get a job. You got the full-time job during the pandemic. I will also say it took me years to get a full-time job after graduating from school. I think that's kind of the norm, but it's more highlighted now just because of some of the lack of opportunities out there right now due to the pandemic. What would you say to people who feel like they're struggling to get a hold of a job and are starting to maybe get down on themselves a little bit about it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first thing I definitely would say is to just breathe and relax, because you can't be hard on yourself during this time. Everyone is going through this in a pandemic. Even people that have jobs, it looks different for everyone. There's not opportunities out there as much as there would be. So just breathe and relax and not be so hard on yourself. Also, to just continue to like put, keep fighting, because you don't want to give up and, you know, be without the fight when things do get normal and we do turn back to normal and, you know, things are opening back up. But I guess overall, to continue to put your work out there, find different creative, innovative ways for you to still be involved in some sense. Start IGTV during the pandemic, during quarantine, was huge. If you can start something like that and still get interviews and still get practice, do that. There's still different ways that we're able to connect with people, like Zoom, IGTV, IG Live, and different things like that. So if you can still find ways to be innovative, that's also going to stand out to people, because people know how hard it is right now. Different hiring managers, the way that you step up to this challenge will show like what value you can bring to their organization. So it's how you handle it, but don't give up. Everyone is going to have their no's as well. Like, you're going to reach out to people and they're going to be like, oh, now's not the good time, or no, we don't have this, or no, no, no. You're going to get a lot of no's along the way, but one day you're going to get the right yes. Like, those no's are going to lead you to the perfect yes. So don't give up. But yeah, I think that's the main thing. Just be creative, like use this time to get better at something. Hone in on different skills or draft up some ideas as well. Like that story or that different content piece that you have been sleeping on and like wanting to bring to life all this time, now's the time to do it, to just play around with it and just go for it. So the overall message is don't give up.
Keep that Autumn Johnson defensive mentality at it, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Is there anything else that we missed, Autumn, that you wanted to talk about? Or
not so much, I guess, with just being, you know, with women's basketball coming up, I know March Madness is a time for, you know, the men's teams to shine and, you know, go for it. But, you know, watch out for these women's basketball teams too. There's so much going on, so many stories, incredible athletes. Please tune into this tournament. You will not be disappointed. There's so much talent that, you know, that just gets overlooked because it's women playing this game. But I'm telling you, when you tune in, you're not going to be disappointed. So make sure you tune in. Also, with the NBA 2K League, there's now two women drafted into this league. So that women in gaming in general is huge. This is a huge step for the league. Make sure you tune into the NBA 2K League. There's so many stories going on right now. I know a lot of people don't understand how, like, you know, how do people make this into a career and how do you compete competitively in esports? But give it a chance. Look into that as well. Look out for these women that are now in this league. There's international players now in this league as well. So there's different faces and different identities, different cultures and backgrounds that are going to be very interesting to see. So give all sports love going into, you know, this new season and just enjoy the ride.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.